Hello and welcome. Hope you can see me and hear me okay. Welcome to our final group coaching call for Slow Down and Tune In. Thank you for joining me and for being here today. Let me just check everything's looking okay. All right. If you are logging on with me live, let me put my chat back up. Let me put my participants back up. If you are joining me live, say hello to me. Let me know that you can hear me and see me okay, just to make sure my audio and video are looking all right. Let me know where you're joining me from. And thank you to everyone who sent through questions for today's call. We don't have too many questions, which is good. So it's not going to be a really long call today, I don't believe, although it'll probably still run for close to an hour, but we'll see how we go. But thank you to everyone who did send through questions. Beautiful. Thank you, Maria, joining me from San Francisco. Awesome. Happy. It's probably still Tuesday for you. It's Wednesday morning for me here. Okay. I've got your questions all put together in a document, so I'm just going to dive into them for you. And once again, thank you for sending them in. I do just want to say, it's weird. My video is giving me this weird, like, fuzzy, blurry effect down here. I don't know why that is, but don't worry about that. I do just want to say, you know, I'm aware that there's a lot of content to work through in this course. So wherever you're at right now, you might find you're a little bit behind on the coursework. You might find you haven't completed, you know, all of the workbooks or been able to watch all of the video classes or work through all the group coaching calls, for example. And that's totally okay. With this particular program, you will have ongoing access to the membership site and these resources, so you can revisit it at any time. You can, you know, jumble up the order a little bit and move around and explore different modules at different times if you want to. Don't feel, you know, it's easy to feel and make ourselves feel like some type of failure or something if we haven't completed a course in the set time or in the way, you know, at the times it was released. But really just trust your process. Trust that you can work through it all at your own pace, that you'll have ongoing resources, and that I am aware there's a lot of content here to work through. So please don't be hard on yourself if you haven't kept up week to week in the way that you had hoped to. But that is totally okay. All right, where are my questions? Let me bring them up. And let's go. Sorry, my computer's balanced on some books, so it wobbles a little bit every time I use my mouse. Okay, question. We've got it, like all the questions are quite different on this particular call, but that's cool. We get to cover some really interesting different topics today. Someone has asked here, I'd love for you to expand on the topic of shifting your focus onto things that are going well and that you're grateful for, which is something we often talk about. For this woman, she says, I try to do it, but it doesn't feel like it works because I go into this really panic kind of hyperventilation about good things being taken away from me. So she's saying she's wanting to practice the gratitude and appreciation of what she has. But when she does that, it activates a fear of those things being taken away. She's like, almost as though I will jinx them and ruin them by being really happy that I have them. And it's a really crippling fear that takes over. And then I feel guilty because I feel like I should be grateful for these things, regardless of if I lose them. She's got enough self-awareness to know this comes from childhood for her, growing up in an unstable, sort of unsafe feeling environment with one of her parents being mentally and physically ill. And so feeling in this sort of constant state of fear of what will happen next, not knowing what will happen next. And she still says she's working on this in therapy at the moment, which is beautiful. And I just really want to acknowledge that, because so much of this journey, as I often talk about, is about understanding where does some of this stuff come from for us? Does it come from a key childhood experience? Does it come from something significant that happened in our lives? And if so, it's a really beautiful thing to have the courage to say, I need to get some support to work on this. I'm going to go through therapy. I'm going to work with a practitioner. So I want to honor this woman for doing that. It's a really courageous and important part of the healing process. So obviously she's working on this root core kind of feeling, but she'd asked if I could offer anything that might help her. So let me just see if I can offer some additional things that might be supportive. So first of all, when we come on to something that really triggers us, you know, we don't want to push off or force ourselves into doing a particular practice that is actually activating a very deep fundamental fear for us. So you know, work gently with this. You don't, just be mindful of not making yourself wrong for having a little bit of trouble with this practice. We actually need some compassion to understand, like, you're understanding why this is difficult for you. And so that brings in compassion and gentleness to say, I'm finding this hard. Someone who doesn't have the past history of trauma that I have wouldn't find this practice hard, but I do have this past experience. And so it's going to mean that this is going to be an area of growth and work for me. And I'm not going to make myself wrong or feel bad for the fact that really appreciating what I have is a trigger point for me. So we just want to recognize that and be gentle in this area then, rather than needing to force yourself to be really good at this, if this is actually going to be a difficult area for you. So that's totally okay. We all have our areas that are trigger points for us. And I'm not sure what you're unpacking in therapy, but let's just talk about a couple of things here. So, you know, we all have our own our inner stories, our ways of thinking about particular things, and the story we tell ourselves about it, which very often, and the things we focus on about it, which very often creates our emotional reaction to what's going on. So at the moment for her, and I'm sort of just making this up, but I can sort of tell by the words, there's an inner story here of things get taken away from me, or I need to be on alert because I never know what's going to happen next, or sometimes bad, unexpected things happen. I need to be scared. And fear is the way we sort of stay alert and stay in a mode of self-protection to ensure we're ready to act if anything bad happens. And this story of things that make me happy can be taken away. Good things can be taken away. I will or highly likely lose things that I value. So that's kind of the story. And so that's getting activated. And I'm not saying this is just a story. It's a very real story, but we just want to look at it. What is the story that I tell myself here that really activates and creates this feeling? What am I focusing on in this particular situation? Now, one thing you could do is start with just working to rewrite your story around how you would love to think and what you would love to be telling yourself in this situation. And this may take time to believe this and have this be your default way of thinking, but you can start with this as a positive practice in terms of, what would I want my new story to be? My new story might be, it's safe for me to appreciate the good things in my life. It's possible for the good things to stay in my life. I'm learning to believe that I'm worthy of having good things happen to me. I'm learning to feel safe receiving good things. I'm learning to just feel safe in life in general. It's okay for me to feel grateful and appreciative of what I have. So you might just start with some new kind of stories and trains of thinking that you want to practice. And these, when we think in this way, it begins to shift our focus out of fear and creates different feelings for us. And we need to practice these new stories, but we do have the opportunity to consciously choose how we want to think about something. So that's kind of one thing we can do. Another thing we can do is, if we have a very strong story, what we can do is look to find evidence that either disproves that story or which proves to ourselves the story we want to believe. So say the story we want to believe is that these good things that I create in my life can and will stay. They will stay. They're here to stay. Because at the moment, the real feeling is these things will be taken away. It's possible for the good things that I create in my life to stay. I want you to see if you can find any examples of that. So at the moment, your mind is defaulting to all of the examples it has of times that you've had something good, something you valued, and it was taken away. Or it's defaulting to the fear of, warning, be careful, these things might be taken away. But if you can, is there anything you've ever created in your life that wasn't taken away, that actually stayed, that has been around for a little while? It could be the home you're living in. It could be a friendship. It could be a relationship. It could be a work situation that you're in. It could be, you know, some of the items you have around your home that you really cherish, you've actually had for a really long time. I'm just making up examples. It could be your car. It could be, I'm just playing around with ideas of things that you can look for that are examples of where you've called in something good and it's still here. It hasn't been taken away. And we want to find proof and evidence that one disproves our story and then also helps build evidence to help us believe in our new story.
Yeah.
So an example for me might be, say for a long time I had a story that in relationships that men were dishonest or men were deceiving me or men, you know, weren't able to commit to me. And for a long time I believed that. And so every time I would date a guy, I would just notice that about him. And I'd hear, you know, stories from my friends around how men would let them down. And I was had all this evidence to prove what I believed about men. And as I've come into this really healthy relationship that I'm in now, I've started to get some evidence that's saying to me, no, men are happy to commit. Men love, men want to commit. Men want to devote themselves to one woman. Men are honest. Men are genuine. Men are caring. And the more that I've started to open up to that, I've started opening my mind to look for proof and evidence of that. And I see so many of my friends in incredible marriages with beautiful, devoted partners. I see friends of mine meeting wonderful men and getting into beautiful relationships. Now, both of those pieces of evidence are always there. I can either, if I choose to look for men are lying and deceiving and hurtful and cheat, I will find examples of that. If I choose to say men are trustworthy and honest and genuine and committed, I will find evidence of that. Now, this is a very different example, but I'm just using it as an example that there's always proof and evidence of anything you want to prove to yourself. It's just up to you what you're focusing on and what you're looking for. And I don't want to simplify this because I know for this woman it comes from some really powerful and painful past experience, but I'm just giving you some tools you could work with that we can actually choose to change our story and then look for proof and evidence to prove that to ourselves. Yeah. And whatever you choose to look for is what you'll see. Understand that. Whatever you are looking for is what you'll see. You will manifest the proof and evidence to prove to yourself whatever you believe to be true. Whatever you're telling yourself, you will see. So we get to change our story and then see different evidence to prove that to ourselves. So that's another thing. The other thing I'm picking up here is there's a real feeling of unsafety. So whenever we're a child and we grow up in an environment where there's chaos, unpredictability, stress, fear, anxiety, we grow up feeling very unsafe. Like we just can't relax into life. So, you know, you're probably doing already this work in therapy, but your inner child really needs constant reassurance that she's safe. And this might be, you know, when my inner child gets scared, I will imagine going to bed at night and cuddling her. Or sometimes I'll just imagine bringing her up to sit on my lap. And she comes to my mind at about age 4. And I sit her on my lap and I talk to her and I give her a hug or I play with her or I give her some reassurance to ensure she feels safe. So it's important that that part of ourselves is getting a lot of love and support and reassurance and that we are hugging them and holding them and saying, I've got you. I'm going to look after you. You're safe. I'm going to ensure nothing bad's ever going to happen to you. So we're creating that feeling of safety with our inner child. And then the final thing I want to say here, and maybe you're already working on this, but there's an element of detachment when it comes to things, you know, that we call into our life that we need to have. Detachment's a tough one, but it's a really powerful one. And it means that all of us can call in beautiful things into our life that we love and value, but we also have to be okay with the fact that one day they may leave our life. Whether it's a partner, whether it's money, whether it's a home, whether it's something we cherish and value, there's a level of detachment we need where we say, I'm really grateful these things are in my life, but if these things weren't in my life, I'd still be okay. And so there's no longer a fear now. Now that's a hard place to get to, but that is the work. And there's no longer such a fear now of losing these things because we say, they're not the source of my happiness. They add to my feeling of happiness, but they're not the source of my happiness. So I'm going to keep doing my work to find my happiness from within. And then I can just appreciate when good things come into my life. But if they leave my life, that's also okay too, because I'm the source of my happiness, not these things. So they're all my various tips of things you can work with, and I hope that helps. All right, beautiful. Next question. Advice on how to balance the feeling of being happy, inspired, and excited with feeling grounded. This is something I've been struggling with. This is an interesting question. I found it, I'm a little unsure of sort of the context and the exact way this is playing out, but I'll give you what I can to maybe help you with this. So how to balance feeling happy, inspired, and excited with feeling grounded. So I'm guessing they feel like two different energies to you, and that you're struggling to, I wonder, is it either feel both at the same time or integrate both energies into your life? I'm not sure which one it is. But if we look at the energy of grounded, so maybe we want to unpack, what does grounded mean to you or feel to you? Does it mean feeling really calm? Does it mean feeling at peace? Does it mean feeling really in your body, in the present moment? Horrible, I've got a fly in here. Does it mean feeling centered? Really think about what feeling grounded means to you. And then we look at the energy of being happy, inspired, excited. So that feels different, and that feels more like a light high. So grounding is almost like a bringing down of the energy, and happy, inspired, excited is almost like that high vibe, like uplifted, high energy. So we've got these sort of contrasting energies, and both of them are really powerful, beautiful energy. If we're too grounded and we don't have that uplifting energy, we sort of end up just being stuck. But if we have too much happy, inspired, excited energy and we're not grounded, we can become really overwhelmed and anxious and get a bit lost in everything that's going on, a bit flighty. So we definitely want to integrate both. Now, something that I find really interesting is, if I ever come into the space of being happy and inspired, excited, say for example about something that I want to create, something I want to manifest. I'm going to use this as an example. I don't know if this is how it's playing out for you, but let's just see. Sometimes if I get too, like, so let's look with the word excited. Excited is a little bit of a feeling. This is really subtle to just unpack this emotion. It's a little bit of like something I want that I'm excited about, that I don't have and that would feel better than what I have now. And part, a little bit of excited can sometimes, we can get a little bit giddy, and it can almost be a little bit like, what's the energy behind it? I'm just trying to articulate. Sometimes like, oh, life would be so much better if I had this thing. Or sometimes a little bit of like, I want this thing, it's not here yet, and I can't wait to have it. That's the energy I'm trying to articulate. Sometimes it can be that. We're just really getting into what these energies, how they're playing out for you. But sometimes happy, inspired, excited can be quite future focused. Can be like, I can't wait to have this thing or get to this place because it's going to feel so good. But we're also sending out a message of like, it's not here yet, and I can't wait to have it because life is going to be better when it's here. Now, I don't know if this is how it's playing out for you. I'm just unpacking these energies. But something that I've noticed, particularly when we work with desire, that's a little bit different from that, that makes it feel more grounded, is when it's more of a knowing. So I want you to feel the difference between, I feel happy and inspired and excited about what's coming because I can't wait for it, and it's going to be so good when it gets here, and it's going to make my life so much better, or that kind of energy, versus the feeling of, I'm excited about this thing and I know it's done. Like, it's coming, it's happening. And I'm really happy with where I am right now. And I'm also excited about what's coming. It's a really subtle difference that I'm just trying to express in the energy here, because when we are in a really embodied, calm, certain space of knowing about what we want, we definitely feel inspired and excited, but it's not wobbly. It's really solid, because we're not waiting for it to happen. We're not needing it to happen. We're not feeling like it's going to complete us. We're not doubting whether it's going to happen. We just feel really like content in the moment, but also like, yeah, wow, but I also know what's coming. And it's kind of got a solidness to it. It's a difficult thing to explain. So that's sort of how I find it's important for me to integrate grounding with feeling happy, inspired, excited. Because if you ever start to feel really wobbly when you tap into the energy of what you want, or try to tap into feeling really high vibe, even for example, it might mean you've gone a little bit almost out of your body and more into your head. Whereas we want to bring all these energies right down into the body. And when they're in the body, they feel just more solid. So it's like a general feeling of happiness and contentment, but also just being really present and calm at the same time. It's difficult to sort of know exactly how this is playing out for this woman, but I'm just trying to put any words to it that I can. So it's almost what she's implying here is that feeling happy and inspired and excited doesn't create a feeling of being grounded. So what I would do is just balance both and ensure you have practices. So whenever you say start to get into that happy, inspired, excited, and it feels like it takes you out of grounding, stop and do something in that moment that grounds the energy down into your body. So sit on a chair and put your feet flat on the ground. Wiggle your toes so you're really feeling your feet. Draw all your awareness down into your legs. Breathe into your hips. And imagine all of that energy you're feeling that sort of feels like this. You're drawing it down and you're actually holding it in the container of your body. So you're actually bringing it down so it just feels more embodied and integrated in you. And then we just balance, you know, those practices that make us feel happy, inspired, excited, whether it's vision boarding or dancing or, you know, really high vibe, exciting, beautiful practices with practices that make us feel grounded. So maybe it's about knowing and uncovering what really does help you feel grounded. Is it time in nature? Is it practices that really help you slow down? And yeah. I don't know. This is a difficult one to, as I don't have much context to the question, but yeah, I hope what I've shared there is helpful. Okay. Question. I've started listening to week 6 and something came up about the things not being in my control. I have a colleague who always arrives late, leaves earlier than she's meant to, takes longer lunch breaks than allowed, and spends a lot of time scrolling on her phone. I find it really frustrating, but management don't notice or pay attention. So should I be bothered about it? Part of me wants to mention it to my manager, but it sort of feels toxic, but it is in my control, or should I just let it go? This is an interesting one. So anything that triggers us in another person is worth paying attention to in terms of what can we learn or discover about ourselves? Why is it that it bothers you? What does it trigger in you? What feelings? And what do you tell yourself? So what's the story? You know, because when people trigger us, trigger an emotion, trigger a feeling of being out of control, trigger frustration, there's a reason. There's something they're showing us about ourselves. And there's something for us to learn about ourselves through that. And it's not always easy to find the lesson in there. But if we just begin to unpack, why does this bother me so much? What emotion does this bring up? Sometimes the things that trigger us in other people is when there's something that we deeply value and that person's acting in opposition to what we value. So we value being punctual or being efficient or being a good employee, and then we see someone else not being that, and it goes against our values, and it actually creates a sense of judgment. So we go into a state of judgment of the other person. It sounds like it's triggering feelings of being out of control, not being able to control someone else's actions, and maybe explore how that leaves you feeling, why that bothers you. Sometimes the things we get triggered by in other people are things we secretly yearn for in ourselves, but we're not really owning that. So this is just a random example, but this is how it can sort of play out. In my relationship, I often get triggered by my boyfriend's work. He has quite a social work environment. You know, there's work events, they're going out drinking. At times he does a little bit of weekend work in the nightlife scene. So he's out in bars and things like that. And for a long time, I thought it triggered me because that's not my set of values anymore. I'm not into nightlife. I'm not into drinking. I'm not, you know, and so I kind of judged him and I wanted to reject that he was like that. I'm like, I don't like it. I just don't like it, right? But the more that I unpacked it, and this is where it gets a little interesting, I recognize that he's out having a lot of fun. He's out having social interaction. He's out connecting with people. He's out, you know, having this whole variety of experiences. Whereas my work means very often sitting at home by myself in my apartment every single day. And I didn't even realize, but he was triggering me because part of me is craving my version of what he has. I don't want what he has, but I want my version of it. I realize I'm craving more social interaction. I'm craving to be around people. I'm craving to be in a team. I'm craving to have some opportunities to go to maybe an event or a party or something where, you know, I get to be a part of something. And I really had to unpack that to realize I was jealous of him. And that's why I was getting so triggered. It's really difficult to see this stuff. Now, it's difficult, like I said, it's difficult to see it, but you might find, what is it about this woman maybe that you envy? Is it that she's just like, you know, so free, just like, you know, doing her own way and she doesn't care what anyone thinks? That she, you know, does what makes her happy, that she's not constantly compromising herself for her job, that she is, you know, she's creating the work-life balance she wants to have. I'm just sort of making stuff up, but you might find, like, sometimes if we're that type of employee that's very like, you know, I'm on time and I do my work and that's really important to me, but then we see someone who seems to be, you know, still being able to not get pulled up on it, but seems to have created for themselves a much more relaxed way of working, we can actually be a little bit envious of it. And like I said, it's difficult to see, but that's something I've noticed a lot around understanding why we get triggered. That person's actually showing us something that in our own way we want to experience. You don't want to experience it the way she is. You don't want to be sitting there on your phone and running late. But there's something she's representing that part of you, I sense, is kind of wanting in your own way. See if you open up to that, see if you kind of see what it is. Maybe just like, you know, she's just relaxed. She's just like going with the flow. She's not worrying about, you know, anything. Maybe there's elements of that that you're kind of craving for yourself. That can be why we get triggered sometimes. But when it comes to what you want to do about this, I think I mentioned this in the class, it is really cool to do a little list around what is within my control here and what is not. So what is within your control is how you feel about the situation, what you tell yourself about the situation, how much focus you choose to give to it, how much of your energy you give to it, whether you continue to think about it all the time, what you choose to do about it, whether you speak up or not, and also just your own work. So kind of, yeah, her work and the way she does her work is completely different to you. And what's within your control is just your work, your day. What's not within your control is obviously her actions, how management handles it, whether they act on it or not, and whether or not the situation changes. So this helps us see the areas where we can say within ourselves, okay, I can see what's in within my control. What can I change here to help me? And I can see what's not within my control. And these are the things I need to just let go and surrender because I can't even control them. So it's up to you to decide when you look at what is within your control. Is this going to be about you creating some inner shifts in relationship to her in terms of just no longer paying any attention to what she's doing, no longer focusing on it, focusing just on your work and your day, you know, choosing to not give any more thought to it, whatever it is? Or do you actually feel that because it is within your control to say something, that's something you want to act on? And if you want to, that's totally fine. I would actually just sit with yourself and feel into what's going to be the right step. So just imagine following through on that step to go and talk to management, to go and say something. How does that feel? And listen to your inner wisdom, your body wisdom around whether that feels like the right thing to do, or whether you imagine the option of just letting it go and not saying anything and being like, you know what, this is not my concern. And then notice how that feels. And I want you just to feel in your body which one feels like the path you want to take. I don't think there's any right or wrong here. It's whatever your body kind of goes, you know what, that would give me an element of relief. That would help me feel better. That feels in alignment with my values, for example. So, you know, you can even kind of journal on that a little bit and ask your inner guidance, you know, what do I need to learn about myself from this situation? What is this showing me? Is this something I just need to let go of? Or is this something that I should take action on? But it's interesting that it's bringing up a feeling about not being in control, because you're right, you can't control her and you can't control how management handle her. But you may actually feel more empowered if you just simply act on the things that, you know, are within your control and will give you some relief from how you're feeling. But you will need to completely detach from how management respond, whether they do anything about it, and whether she changes. Not within your control at all. But I would unpack a little bit more around why it triggers you and what it's bringing up in you. Because you might learn some things about yourself. Sometimes it's really, really interesting. I don't know what this blurry effect is. Maybe there's I cleaned my camera. Maybe there's a smudge on it. I'm not sure. All right, last question. Last question. Okay. Question about fear and changing jobs. It's interesting. In my 21 days of journaling, we've had a lot of questions come up about people, about changing jobs and the unknown and the uncertainty that comes up around this. And okay, so a little bit of a backstory. Earlier in the year, I felt to leave my job. I was thinking that it wasn't a very logical thing to do and it seemed crazy. But one night before bed, I asked if I should quit. And that night I had a dream showing me what the right career path was. In the dream, it didn't feel right, but then she felt into it a little bit more and it felt scary, but it ended up being what she decided to do. So she decided to leave the job. So she quit the job in October. Initially she said, I felt no worries about it. I felt like I was making the right choice. It was really scary, but I felt really supported. But now I'm having a lot of doubt and I'm wondering if these people were right. Okay. I'm in the unknown. I have had a few job interviews, but I didn't get any of them. And now I'm kind of freaking out because I can stretch my money until Jan/Feb. But now I've started reading articles on how when you have a gap between jobs, you look less marketable to recruiters. Everyone's telling me you only get hired and recruited for jobs from LinkedIn. More fears setting in. So there's all these kind of fear-based stories going on. How do I trust in the magic of the process when everything seems to be pointing and there's only one way to get a job? How do I step back in the place of certain possibilities? So she was saying all these things here where it's like, here's all this proof and evidence of why it's hard to get a job. It's not a good idea to take a break. It's really competitive out there. All these articles are saying it's really hard to get a job at the moment, right? What happened there? There was a really interesting shift that happened for you around when you went from, I quit and I was feeling, I'm just trying to find the words for it. I was feeling it was the right choice and I felt supported. So we had that feeling. And then something shifted when you went into, I'm now freaking out and I'm feeling a lot of fear. And what shifted was you went from listening to your inner guidance to looking outside of yourself for guidance. That's one of the big shifts that just happened here, because your language starts off with talking about how you were listening to yourself and following your heart and doing what felt right. And then your language shifts into what everyone else is saying, that everyone's telling you it's not the right thing to do, that all the articles out there are saying that, you know, it's a bad thing to do. So you've gone outside now and you're looking for all of the evidence outside of yourself. You're looking for the information and you're not listening within anymore. So anytime that happens, and it can happen a lot of times in a lot of different ways, you know, there's so much fear out there. When you look outside yourself to anything the media is saying, your friends and peers are saying, you know, when you're looking on job boards or you're house hunting, you will be inundated with messages of fear and lack and scarcity. They're everywhere. Which is why I teach so much about tuning in, because when you really tune in and you turn off all that external noise, you get to really listen in to the loving inner guidance that's always supporting you. Oh, that's weird. Sorry, there was just a noise in that room. I don't know what that was. Sorry, gave me a fright. I'm just realizing I think a hook fell off the wall and stuff fell down. Okay, that's all right. I just didn't know what that was. Yes. So outside of yourself, you're going to find a lot of fear-based information, but inside yourself, you're going to find loving wisdom and support. So it's always important for us to look within ourselves and during times of unknown and get honest. What am I paying more attention to? My inner guidance, my inner voice, what feels right to me, what my intuition is telling me, the steps I'm being guided to take, or have I given all my power away to all these things outside of me now and I'm letting them dominate and control me and override my inner guidance. Yeah. And you'll most often feel fear whenever you do that. You know, every time I've navigated the unknown, this is a big thing we have to work through in the unknown. Like if I've ever left jobs or changed homes, it always starts with that real feeling of knowing. And then I might start apartment hunting and realize, oh my God, there's like no good properties out there. I go to an inspection. There's like 50 people at an inspection. Everything's so expensive. And then the doubt starts. And whenever that happens, I have to go, okay, step away, tune back in. Stop looking outside of yourself for anything. Stop paying attention to what's manifested. Listen within. So I really want you to be taking some time at the moment. I want you to stop reading articles. Stop asking anyone's opinion. Stop taking all this external advice and come back to that feeling within you and ask that feeling what you should do. What's the next step for you? What's the right job for you? What you should do? Is it time to relax and just make some space, or is it important to be getting into action? Really ensure you're listening within, okay? Because that's what's happened here. So when you say, how do I trust in the magic of the process when everything seems to be pointing to there's only one way to get a job, you stop giving so much focus to that story. And you start coming back within, which is where you find the magic, which is where you find the guidance that's going to guide you through the unknown. And also, we've got to remember our role as a conscious creator. So we're not in our power when we look outside of ourselves and just believe what we already see manifested and think that's all that's possible. We come into our power when we look within and we dream up whatever possibility we want, and we choose to believe in that, and we believe in our ability to create that. So I want you to listen in and decide what you want, and then journal about and write about the next role you want, what you want it to look like, how you want it to feel, what you want to manifest, the whole process. I want it to be easy. I want them to meet me and say, yes, she's the perfect candidate. I want it to come in at the exact right time. I want to do this type of work. I want it to feel like this, and actually use your conscious creation power to manifest what you want. And, this doesn't mean we just go airy fairy and not take action, but you don't have to just believe what you see. You need to believe in what you know and feel within. Because it's really hard to step through the unknown, you know, and I've said this before, but trust is placing faith in what you feel and know within, not in what you see with your eyes. How can we possibly navigate the unknown when we're looking outside of ourselves and all we see is unknown? You find the known and the certainty within. Yeah, is this making sense? So that's going to be the only way to navigate this. Stop paying attention to anything that triggers fear that is based on lack and limitation and scarcity. Come back into find that place that first guided you to make this change, and ask that part of yourself what you should do next. and ask that part of yourself to guide you to the perfect job, to guide you to the opportunities. If you ever go into a meeting, a job interview, wrap the whole room up in love and light, call in the angels, pray, focus on what you want to see. There's so much beautiful energy work you can do to create what you want. You don't have to do it just through the logical, action-based way that everyone else is doing it. I hope that's supportive. Navigating the unknown is really, really scary. But like I said, what's beautiful as well when you come in to be a creator is you can create things that other people would be like, whoa, that doesn't even make sense. How'd you create that? That's crazy. Like, opportunities can appear out of thin air. You can be the person that's in the right place at the right time. I think I've told this story so many times before, but I always think about it with how I manifested this apartment. And I often think about, creating jobs and creating apartments in a similar kind of way, because it's very easy to get into scarcity and lack and competitiveness and all that stuff when you're apartment hunting as well, and you're trying to get a lease and you're trying to get approved and all this stuff, particularly when you're self-employed. But I remember I was, before I moved into this place, I was moving out of another place. I was apartment hunting like a crazy lady, and I just kept missing out on apartments. I'd get down to the final two and I'd miss out. Then I almost got one, and then the owners wanted to move in, and I was like, oh my God, like all this crazy stuff was just blocking me constantly. And I started to feel like, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to find this home. Or then I'd go to look at places and they were disgusting. And I was like, I can't live here. And I had so much doubt. And it got to the end of my lease in the other place and I didn't have anywhere to go. So I thought, okay, I'll put everything in storage and I'm just going to go take a break. And I went and spent some time with my family in Melbourne for a couple of weeks. And I just relaxed, and I started to work on my energy again rather than my action. And I was got back into visualizing and feeling and meditating and praying and asking for guidance. And I just took the pressure off. Then I came back to Sydney and I was staying at a girlfriend's place. I was like, you know what? I can't find a place. I just need to go stay somewhere in the interim. And I was staying at her house, which is literally around the corner. And there was an open for inspection at this place that weekend. The weekend I'd just come back into Sydney. And I thought, you know what? I'm so sick of apartment hunting. I'm not going to go view it. But I was like, oh, it's literally around the corner. I might as well just pop in. And I walked into this apartment and I was like, oh my God, I think this is my apartment. And I thought, yeah, this is really great. There weren't that many people here. It was within my budget. And I was like, this is really, really cool. I went to go to apply for the apartment, and it turns out the real estate agent that was leasing it was a real estate agent I'd leased off 10 years earlier. So I'd already leased off him before, so he would have known me, and I had a written reference letter from him. So I went to go submit my application and I was like, hey Chris, this is kind of funny, but I'm including a written reference that actually happens to be from you because I leased off you 10 years ago. Now, that was a completely crazy synchronicity that I was not in control of, that I just happened to come into an apartment with the same agent I've leased off before, who knew me, who wrote a written reference for me. He wrote back, oh, Connie, how funny, la, la, la. And within a couple of hours, the apartment was mine. Now, I couldn't have controlled any of that. That was the magic of the universe coming in to support me, to put me in the right place at the right time, to line everything up that I needed to have what I wanted. And so when we really come back into our creative power, magic happens. You can manifest things that other people be like, whoa, how did that even happen for you? And it can be easy and it can all just fall into place. But you have to come in and listen to yourself and get into energetic alignment and do your inner work. Because the reason I couldn't manifest my apartment with all the other action I was taking was because I was in a complete state of fear and scarcity, and I wasn't in alignment with what I wanted. You can't manifest what you want from fear and scarcity. You have to come in and find that place of peace and calmness and knowing and love within yourself, and then you take action from there. All right. That is all I feel to say on that. Hi, Dan. You joined us as I was chatting. Beautiful to see you. All right, loves, that is my group coaching call. I only had 4 questions, but I wanted to give them a lot of detail because they're great. And I find, with these questions, Even if you're not having this particular situation, I always try to share things that you can even just take that out and apply that to your own situation. I'll be like, oh, wow, that's an interesting thing to think about. You know, why we get triggered in relationships, or am I listening to my inner guidance or the external guidance, or, where's my energy at around my desires? I want you all to be able to always take something away from the question, even if you can't relate to the specific question itself. So I hope that was supportive for you. It was nice to come on and answer those for you. As we know, this is our last group coaching call for Slow Down and Tune In. So our journey is almost complete. But as I said, you have ongoing access to that member site. And I really hope this member site serves for you as just a beautiful resource for you, that at any time in the future, at any time you need, you know, a little bit of support, you can just be like, oh, maybe I'll go watch that class on surrender, or maybe I'll go watch that class on, you know, intuition, or I'll go watch that class on self-love. And I hope that you can continue to draw on all of these resources in the future for as long as you need to just keep supporting you on your journey. Please don't worry if you haven't finished the whole course and finished it in the 9 weeks. It's a lot of content that I've given you. But like I said, just keep coming back to this and see this as a little support program for you to revisit and draw on little bits and pieces at different times that you need it. So we still have one more week left of our coursework. So I'll continue to be in our Facebook group and be supporting you with all of that. But I hope this call today has been helpful, and I'll upload it to the members site for you as soon as I jump off. Sending you lots of love, everyone. I hope you have a beautiful day, and I'll talk to you all soon. Bye.